We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lukumski, coming to you from my home in Northfield, Minnesota, and I have with me
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark, coming to you from Ascension Lutheran Church, where I serve as pastor here in beautiful South St. Louis.
And before we begin our show today, I'd like to make a public service announcement, if you don't mind, Matt. I'm sure anyone who's been watching the news is very concerned because of all the lettuce. The contaminated lettuce that
yes.
is out there.
Yeah.
And of course that's just the tip of the iceberg. I don't know if you also noticed that there's recalls on basil and cilantro.
Was that meant to be a pun, John? The tip of the iceberg?
You know what? Sometimes I'm so funny I don't even know.
You don't even know it. I know, yeah.
But thank you, yes. Yes, the tip. So cilantro, like you said, raspberries included. And I just want to remind people, there are no recalls on bacon. Okay.
You're safe with bacon.
You're safe with bacon. And also, you'll enjoy this, pies. I searched the internet. No pies are
being
recalled.
Music to my ears, John. Yes, pies are safe.
Our donuts. Okay. So I think it's pretty clear what you should be eating if you don't want to find yourself ill.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So this announcement has come from the American Association of Bacon, Pie, and Donut Lovers.
Now that's an association I want to be a member of, John.
You are a member. You and I are co-chairmen.
The founding members.
Of the association. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, it did strike me. Isn't it amazing that all this stuff, you just don't know what to eat anymore. Although, again, yes, we do know what to eat. Bacon, pie, and donuts. You said to me, John, I'd like to talk about Genesis 13. I'm thinking, oh, well, that must be some really big story in the Old Testament. I wonder why I don't remember what it is. Because usually most of that, I don't know everything. But the big stories I could probably, chapter 13, and then I look, what? Why? What are we doing Genesis 13 for, Matt?
Good question, John. Glad you
yeah,
asked.
Yeah, good question.
But
yeah.
It really is true, because when you look at the book of Genesis, chapter 13 is sandwiched between these blockbuster events, things that are pretty exciting, things that we do know about. So chapter 12, right before it, is the call of Abram. Boy, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
No.
And then you have that episode about Abram and Sarah in Egypt, and we probably remember how Abram lies about her being his sister and, denies that, that she's his wife. And then all that takes place after that. And then the following chapter, we have Lot being kidnapped and rescued by Abram, which is pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah.
And then we meet that strange guy, Melchizedek, who becomes pretty important later, especially in the book of Hebrews. But chapter 13, right in the middle of those things, it's just an account of Abram and Lot sort of going separate ways, starting to settle the land. What's exciting about that? As I teach this in Bible class, we're in Genesis in our Tuesday morning Bible class here at Ascension. When I was reading that, I'm also reading through Martin Luther's lectures on Genesis. So he has, I think, some really nice insights, John. So any insights that we have on today's episode are not from me, but they're from our good friend Martin Luther. So I'll be sharing a few quotes from him too. But I think there's a little more here than what we might see on the surface as we look at Genesis 13.
And let me put in a plug for Martin Luther, because I agree with you. I think that's his commentary on Genesis. I think he wrote it when he was fairly mature, and it's probably one of the best things he wrote. And you're right, just filled with wonderful Christ-centered insights. And of course, you can buy it from Concordia Publishing House.
My wife will be so happy that you're playing CPH, John. Thanks so much.
That we plugged him. Tell her that we did that.
I sure will.
Okay.
tell them that John and Matt sent you when you go.
And we get no money from CPH, so it's just purely out of our concern for our listeners. Yeah.
All right. Well, good.
So what is it? Tell me.
Well, let's jump in. Let's take a look. So this is Genesis 13. Let's read verses, going to 1-7, John, if you don't mind. And again, to set the scene, this is right after they leave Egypt. They were there due to a famine. And the Lord, despite Abram's, dishonesty, especially concerning Sarai, still blesses him. So let's read about that in verses 1-7.
So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the Negev. Now Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent has been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he has made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord, and Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Well, a little interesting commentary there at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. So here they are leaving Egypt, and it is Abram, and then who else is with him? Who does it specifically mention, John?
Lot.
Yeah. So Lot is Abram's nephew. We learn about that back in chapter 11. He's the son of Haran, who was Abram's brother, who died. Okay.
Okay.
So now you almost get the impression Abram kind of adopts him. Lot is on this journey with him to this new land, and it's Uncle Abram and nephew Lot.
Yeah,
Those are the two. All right.
That sounds like it could have been a situational comedy. Couldn't it?
Yeah.
Uncle Abram and nephew Lot.
Yeah, yeah, really. It almost becomes a drama at very least.
Yeah.
And there is some comedic parts as we read on. I mean, it's just kind of a mess what they get themselves into. But this is kind of the first challenge they face is this one. The first of a number of challenges. And so what's the problem? It's kind of a good problem to have, John, if you're going to have a problem. But what's the problem they find themselves in?
Well, they're so richly blessed. Both of them are so richly blessed that there's no room in the land to take care of both of their herds.
Exactly. There's just not enough. We can't stay together. There's just too many of us. There's too much livestock, too much cattle. We just can't. And so there's even, there might be disagreements between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's, so there's could be an issue here. All right. So what can we learn from this? Well, where Luther goes with this is he starts to talk a little bit about wealth. Okay.
Okay.
And possessions. Because, in the Reformation era, there's this idea that it's a little more holy if you don't have wealth.
Sure.
Especially if you take a vow of poverty.
Poverty.
So,
yeah.
So, for instance, if you want to be a little more holy, a little closer to God, you become a monk, and one of the vows you take is a vow of poverty, which kind of implies that, well, then wealth and possessions are bad, right?
Yeah.
If you're a monk, you can take a vow of poverty. Well, then possessions and things must be bad, inherently bad somehow. And Luther addresses that. So here's what Luther has to say about this. This is a direct quote from him. He says, "Abram keeps on managing and using his possessions, and his special effort is to keep his heart pure. Mm. He does not become proud because of his wealth, and does not gain and preserve it in a greedy manner. But he is generous and hospitable." And we'll see that in just a little bit. Luther goes on, "Let us therefore reject those monkish and foolish ideas."
Monkish. You're not talking about monkeys, by the
way.
No,
monkish. Yeah,
monkish,
like yes. "Let us not think that there is anything evil in the management or the use of things. If there is any fault, it is in the heart. Let us see to it that the heart is right, and then everything else will be right." So I appreciate Luther's words there, John, that Abram is blessed by the Lord. These are gifts from God. His wealth, it says that he has silver and gold and herds, blessings from God. That in and of itself isn't bad. It's how your heart is, right? If your heart is right when it comes to the management of those things, everything else will be right too. So any thoughts on that, John, and those words from Luther?
Just that, yeah, that's kind of one of the big emphasis of the Reformation, because the church at that time really did focus on externals. Like you said, maybe giving up all your money, going to church, going to mass every week. And one of the big emphasis was, well, it's not that these things are necessarily bad. I mean, it's not bad if you want to give all your money to the poor. No one would say that's a sinful thing. But you're right, the issue is always with the heart. And what we do on the outside could simply be hypocritical. You know, in fact, you could go to mass every week and you could still be, well, like a Pharisee. And that's still an issue today. So, yeah, that's an important thing. It's what's in the heart that really counts. And of course, what's important about that is what changes the heart. But I'm sure you'll get to that in a moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. So that's just the outward external things that we do. But it's what is our heart? Yeah, definitely. So I think that helps us as we look at our own lives. I think Luther's words reflect the words that we hear in the New Testament, that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not money in and of itself, possessions in and of itself, but the love. So again, it's a heart issue. What do you love? And if you love money, possessions more than God, more than your neighbor, well, then there's a problem. Whether you have a little bit of money or a lot of money, there's an issue. But whether you have a little or a lot of money, if your heart is right, and how you steward that, how you use those gifts, is right. Well, thanks be to God. Yeah. All right. Good. The other thing that Luther points out is, we see Abram doing this all over the place. So one of the things he does there is one of the first things is he worships, right?
He makes
an altar. Yeah. He stops. He calls on the name of the Lord, verse 4. And Luther just sort of picks up on that and says, Abram is praising this passage because he did these things not in some corner for fear of threats or the violence of the heathen, but in a public place in order that by his own example and that of his people, he might lead others to the knowledge of God and to true forms of worship. So I think that's kind of interesting. You know, like you pointed out, it says that the Perizzites and the Canaanites were in the land. These are not people who follow the Lord.
No.
They're heathen, as Luther calls them. But yet, Abram still worships, still calls on the name of the Lord. And it's in worship to God, right? But also, as Luther points out, a witness to others too, right? And, I think in our own lives that our words, our actions, our lifestyle, and even our worship would be a witness to others too. Things that are not just done in a corner and, we just keep our faith private. We don't want anyone to know we're a Christian. No, just to be who we are, to call on the name of the Lord in word and action and in worship, similar to Abram. That can be a witness to others too. So I appreciate Luther pointing that out as well.
Matt, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And this may sound like a stupid question, but then again, what do you expect? You've worked with me for years.
Did you do a
study about Paul on the there in the book of Acts where he was preaching about the idols, the unknown idol?
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, okay. Mars Hill. Creopagus.
The reason I have to ask is because I'm involved in a couple of different shows there on KFUO, and I can't remember where we did what.
But you are the voice of KFUO, Pastor John Lukowski.
A hoarse voice at that, but still. Because I remember you also talking about that's what Paul did. He went right into the community, right into the center where every people were gathering. Not necessarily a place they would welcome with open arms, but that's where he went, and he began his proclamation. And I just wanted to make that comment because sometimes as a church we fail to do that. I think we've become kind of inwardly focused. We're just talking to the in crowd. And if we do talk to the out crowd, it's usually in a very negative fashion about everything that's wrong out there in the world. And maybe we'd be better if we just called upon the name of the Lord in a public way. That's just an editorial comment.
I agree, 100%. And the other thing I love is this is in the Old Testament. This is only the 13th chapter of the Bible.
Yeah.
And yet there seems to be a concern for others to know the Lord too, right? It's not just some secret, and it's God doesn't just love Abram, but no, it's his love for the world. So Abram seems to recognize that, and Luther certainly recognizes it and highlights it in his commentary. So, you know, Abram seems to be in favor of calling on the Lord and being a witness in that way. Luther's in favor of it, highlights it. You know, we should be too. We should seek that out as well. Definitely, you know, as the Lord gives opportunity. Yeah, to be bold about that, to call in the name of the Lord, for sure. All right, good. Let's keep going. Well, we've got verses 8 through 13, if you could cover those.
Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. If you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled into the land of Cana, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. Okay, I can kind of anticipate what Luther might have had to say about that. But
yeah, I think it's something really helpful, actually. So, first of all, two main points. One is we've got Uncle Abram and nephew Lot, right? And what suggestion does Uncle Abram make?
Take your pick. Go to the left. Yeah, whichever one looks better to you, that's fine with me.
Yeah. Now, you know, when you think about most uncle-nephew relationships, you know, who is the one who probably had the power here and the more control over the situation? I would say Abram, right?
I'm the grandpa here. I get the choice, right?
That's right.
You young punks, you take whatever I leave you.
Yeah. I get to decide where we're going out to eat.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, similar here. Abram could have said, "Hey, you know, nephew Lot, I'm gonna take the good land. You can have the rest, okay?" But he does just the opposite. He sort of puts aside, you know, the respect that he's due, and you know the power that he's due, and instead he defers to Lot. And it even says why he does that. Verse 8, why is Abram so generous, and why does he let Lot have the pick of the land?
Because he doesn't want strife.
He doesn't want strife. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, thinking of family relationships today, what's more important to Abram, that he have the best of the land or that he has a loving relationship with his family member? Well, you know, the relationship, right? He doesn't want that strife. And to think about that today, too, you know, are there times, and we've probably seen this as pastors, are there times where stuff, possessions, and inheritance, whatever, sort of gets in the way of and even harms family relationships? And sadly, I've seen that, right?
See it all the time when someone dies and then there's a question about their inheritance. Yeah, people that once before were loving and tight-knit now are fighting over the most simplest things too. Sometimes it's not a lot of great wealth or whatever. It's just something that belongs to me. You know, I should have that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, John. And you know, it's to do that at the expense of their relationship. What? How sad, right?
Yeah.
So to avoid this strife, Abram is generous. Let's Lot pick. You know, so I think it harkens back to Luther's earlier comment. It's not about the possessions; it's about the heart. And we see here, we get a glimpse at Abram's heart, that he's generous, he's kind-hearted, he's selfless with his possessions. And we see this demonstrated with, letting Lot have the pick of the land, the pick of the land.
And I don't want to steal your thunder, Matt, because obviously this was the study you did. But the reason why Abram can be that way is because Abram realizes that all this great blessing he has, that's a gift from God. And as you pointed out earlier, Abram hasn't been the best guy. It's not like he trusts the Lord fully. You know, he's lying about his wife. He does that a couple times. But he knows, no. God has given all this to me. He's given it to me out of grace. So therefore, you can have whatever you want. The Lord's still going to take care of me. I might not have as much worldly blessing as I had before, but that's okay because I've got all these eternal blessings. And again, all because God is a God of grace.
Yeah, and that's exactly, in the next section of verses, 14 and following, that's exactly what happens. God kind of takes Abram aside and says, Abram, don't worry, I'll take care of you.
Yeah,
that's basically the message. Exactly what you just said, John. So we'll get there, but yeah, for sure. The other point in this section we just read, though, is from Luther. And so you have this little note there at the end. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. And if our listeners are familiar with the whole episode of Sodom and Gomorrah and God's destruction of Sodom, we see that, yeah, boy, they are doing some wicked things. So then Luther raises the question, okay, wait a second, these wicked men in Sodom, they're living in the best part of the land. They're living in the sweet spot. So then Luther late raises the question, well, why does it seem like sometimes the wicked get the best stuff? Why are the wicked blessed, right?
That's so a Luther good question. And what's his answer?
No kidding. Yeah. So here's Luther's answer. I think there's two good points. He says, but why are good things given to the worst people to enjoy? Luther asks. This question is beyond our comprehension. Mm. And it directs us to keep the end in mind. Two points. One, it's beyond our comprehension. Don't even worry about it because we really don't have an answer to that question. Okay, so that's the first point. The second point is that it helps us keep the end in mind. And Luther goes on and says, even though the ungodly fare well for a while, they finally go down to eternal doom. And even though the godly are afflicted, the Lord nevertheless leads us according to his own plan and in the end receives us into glory. All right. So the second half of his answer is, okay, they may prosper for a while, but guess what? Apart from Jesus, you know, what do they have to look forward to? Just eternal gloom, hell, right? But for us as Christians, because of Christ, purely because of him, even though we're sometimes afflicted, right? Take up your cross and follow me. Nevertheless, it leads to eternal glory. Again, all because of our Savior, Jesus Christ. But we look at that then, when the wicked prosper, even still today, we think, one, I don't know why, no clue, can't comprehend it, as Luther says. But two, we think, let me remember the end. Let me remember that God promises that he's prepared a place for me in my Father's house, in his mansion in heaven. And he's going to fulfill that because of Christ.
And I think the key thing is what you said at the beginning there, that we know that that is ours simply because of what Jesus Christ has done. Yeah. It is a gift from God and his grace and mercy. Because as long as you do keep the focus upon what I do, then you'll never have that comfort. And then I think you'll do one of two things. You'll say, well, I'm going to give it all up because this shows how holy and good I am. Or you will become, oh, I've got to hold on tight to this stuff because I don't know whether God will bless me or not. And it would have been easy for Abraham to think that way, right? Well, I just sinned. I just didn't trust the Lord. So now maybe God won't take care of me. But see, Abraham was saved by faith, the scripture says, and that's his faith. It's not that he realized what he did was wrong when he lied about his wife, okay? I'm sure he repented before the Lord. But he also understood that's not why God was blessing him in the first place. It had nothing to do with how good or how bad he was. It was just because that's the kind of God he is. And then you can be free when you understand, okay, it's all from the Lord because of his grace. Whatever I get, be it trouble and trial or be it worldly blessing, I've got God and I know how it's all going to end up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if I know that, if that's what's reflected in my heart, this is all a gift. Yeah, it changes how I use those gifts. Let's wrap up then with verses 14 through 18, John. And again, now the Lord speaks to Abram, and he's got some beautiful promises for him.
I'm sorry, a thought just occurred to me before we leave. Yep. See, that's the other thing, though, the fact that Lot chose a portion of the land where he knew there was evil and wickedness. It was a really beautiful part of the land. But the reason I mention that, because we just got through reading a devotion by Walther. Lynn and I are doing this daily devotion from Walther, which is also available from Concordia Publishing House.
Thank you, John.
Do you think we'll get anything from CPH?
Well, we can try.
All right. But anyway, that's the point he makes, that because of the heart, just what you said, because of the heart, we would actually avoid things that might be profitable, but we're thinking, there might be some temptation to sin in that. It might bring us into a place of where there could be evil and stuff. So, well, yeah, I could prosper, but no, I'll put that aside too. Well, anyway, the Lord, go ahead.
I'll just stop. I'm going to just stop here for a second, John. Go ahead if you want to. Okay. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead and read a little bit if you want from verse 14.
The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make thee your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that no one can count the dust of the earth. Your offspring also will be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you." So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord.
He's building another altar, John. Yeah, worshiping the Lord yet again, and rightly so, and it looks like perhaps in a public way too. All right, so beautiful promises to Abram. I'm going to take care of you, and more than that, your offspring, right? And we think of Jesus Christ, descendant of Abraham, and we think of us, offspring of Abram by faith, right? And the land that we are promised, and land of heaven, the land of heaven itself, that land of promise. But I think what I want to end with, John, is as we look at this, I think we see in Abram a shadow or a type, sometimes we use that word, of Jesus.
Okay.
Of Jesus in this old account. Abram, again, he defers to Lot, even though Abram has the right to take whatever land he wants. After all, he's the uncle. More than that, God has promised it to him, for crying out loud. He could take whatever he wants, right? But in order for there to be no strife, for the sake of love for his nephew Lot, he puts that aside, his rights, and lets Lot have that land. And I think of Jesus, right? How he puts aside, the glory of heaven, descends, becomes one of us, gives up everything, goes to the cross, not for himself, but for us, all out of love for us. Again, he doesn't have to do that, but he does it for us. And I think of Philippians 2, where it says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Each should look to not only his own interest, but to the interest of others." So to look to the interest of others, that's what Abram does. That's what Jesus does in an even greater way. And the very next verse in Philippians says, "Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ, who was in the very form of God, did not account equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptying himself, becoming a servant, born in the likeness of men, and humbled himself to the point of death on a cross," right? So to reflect what Jesus has done for us, as Abram did, and as we're called to do too, to have that same mind among ourselves, looking to the interests of others.
And see, we can do that because that's exactly the way Jesus Christ has taught us. And I hope people can understand it's not so much that it's an example for us to follow. Mm-hmm. Of course, mm-hmm. I suppose it is. But it is because that's how God deals with us day in and day out. And therefore, as Abraham understood, I can be free to put aside my rights because, first of all, the key thing I have, which is eternal life, nobody's going to take that away from me because that's promised to me by Jesus who suffered and died and rose for me. And therefore, I can also love you the way Jesus loves me because I have no doubt about his care and his forgiveness. Matt, thank you for sharing with us a text that I wasn't really sure what it was all about, but it was a great message. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.